Hi, it's Alyssa. I'm not on today's episode, but I wanted to correct an error. In the second segment, you will hear Mike refer to Palantir co-founder Peter Thiel as Peter Thiel. The right way to say it is Peter Thiel. We apologize to you, our listeners, but we do not apologize to Peter Thiel. On with the show.
It is Monday, September 29. This is LA Podcasts. Today we're going to be talking about the speech that everyone at City Hall is talking about. Jimmy is back, and there's a lot more on the ICE invasion and LA's pushback. I'm Mike Bonin.
I'm Rachel Reyes.
And I'm Olga Lexell.
Welcome to LA Podcast.
Thank you. Longtime listener, first time co-host.
And for our listeners who don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm a local TV writer here, very involved with the WGA, and I ran the Fox picket line. I'm also a local organizer with a bunch of West Side organizations. I've done a lot of mutual aid stuff. I worked on Bubba Fish's election to Culver City Council. I worked on Measure HLA with Streets for All, and I'm really into mobility, especially because I ride my bike everywhere.
And just last week, you were on a panel with the esteemed Alyssa Walker discussing mobility in LA, right?
I was. I think that's how I got onto the pod. She was my in.
That was your audition.
Yeah.
So we got a lot to get into today. First of all, let's just sort of give an update on something we talked about on last week's podcast. It was this big vote at Los Angeles City Hall last Friday while we were recording about an approval for a big multi-million dollar expansion of the LA Convention Center. And all Friday afternoon, all weekend long, beginning of this week, anybody connected to LA city government or LA politics have all been buzzing about one thing, and that is the Katie Yaroslavsky speech.
That obligation is going to eat up all projected general fund growth for the foreseeable future. I am not making that up. It comes directly from the CAO's report. So what does that mean? Colleagues, it means that when we want to accelerate the hiring of police officers or expand the fire department, there will be no money left to do it. If we want to repair the sidewalks that are costing us more than $100 million a year in liability or build new bike lanes and walkable communities so that we're in compliance with HLA, there will be absolutely no money to do it. There's no money now, but there certainly won't be. When members want to start a public bank, restore funding for senior meals, pay for immigration defense, or hire more crossing guards to protect kids walking to school, there's not going to be money for it. If you think city services are bad now, and I think all of us would agree that they suck, and you thought maybe one day we would have funding to restore service, I have bad news. It's going to get worse. We aren't going to be able to afford even the level of service we have right now, which is crap.
So she's my councilwoman in CD5. And to be honest, I don't agree with her on most things, but I think this is the coolest thing she's ever done. I got to give her kudos for that, because I was shocked that everybody on our city council pretty much went for this unquestioned.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. I think she's been a strong advocate for her district and the issues that she is really passionate about. Even if I haven't agreed with her, I love to see council members stand up. But this speech really impressed me. I think she echoed a lot of what I have felt about this particular issue. And I was just really happy to see a council member stand with such conviction, despite, like you said, Olga, probably knowing that the rest of the council was going to vote differently. But I just really appreciated having that voice. At least someone said it.
I think my favorite part of this whole saga that no one in LA has talked about yet is Isabel Jurado's Instagram war with the city of Fresno over this convention center. Isabel posted a clip of her own speech on her Instagram, and in it she talks about how we need these upgrades because Shakira ended her tour in Fresno instead of Los Angeles because they have a better convention center. I don't think that's why. But the city of Fresno came for her in the replies. Every other reply is like, excuse me, I'm the president of Fresno and this God. Is the worst thing anyone's ever said. It was actually pretty cool.
I didn't see any of that. But I will say of Katie's speech that regardless of where you stood on the vote, people who disagreed with her on the vote thought she did an excellent job making the case against the approval. She and Nithya Raman were the only two against it. Neither Monica Rodriguez nor Bob Blumenfeld were there, and they were likely no votes on it. So it probably would have been 11-4. But Katie just laid it out in as stark as terms as possible over the city's fiscal crisis. And it was, to my mind, probably one of the best speeches I have ever heard in LA City Council chambers.
I think it was especially impactful because she doesn't usually take a huge stand on certain issues, but obviously as chair of the budget committee, this is becoming more and more of a thing. Although I will say that I wish there was a discussion of the other departments of the city of LA that have caused this budget crisis, namely the LAPD. But we'll probably get to that soon.
Well, speaking of that, just a few days after this vote, Mayor Bass made a big announcement on social media and with an article on Substack talking about they have saved all the city jobs, that no civil service employees were laid off, since the budget was proposed and then since the budget was approved, they have continually whittled down the number of people to be laid off until after negotiating with labor, there were none.
Yeah, despite her best efforts, Mayor Karen Bass can celebrate saving city jobs because that was not what she proposed to do. So I think this victory lap is kind of weird. But I really want to, I do want to thank our city council for doing the hard work that they had to do to actually present and pass a budget that does not cut the city jobs that were intended to be cut by the mayor. So again, I think it's weird that she is celebrating it in this way because she didn't have to propose it the way that she did. She could have done anything that she wanted to do.
It's a very mayor thing to do, I think, to just be like, yes, of course.
We does a lot of heavy lifting.
Arms, and we did this.
It probably took much more of an effort than it may look on the outside. I don't know who did the actual negotiating, but whoever did, I mean, kudos to them. But there's one thing I think that really needs to be pointed out here because it gets lost in the messaging, right? What got saved was city jobs, and that's good. We don't want people getting laid off. What did not get spared were city services because people did not stay. It wasn't like we just said, oh, we're not going to lay you off. It was we moved people from a general funded department, most of the departments in the city, to a separate department like the airport or DWP that is not coming from the general fund that has its own sources of revenue. And so the cost of that employee is there. But if they were doing work in a library, they're not doing work in a library anymore, right? If they were doing work for recreation and parks, they're not at that park anymore. So the impact on city services is still going to exist. How big it will be, I don't know. This might be something for, you know, city controller to look at over the next year, what the actual impact has been.
Well, thank you for pointing that out too, because I think that is an important distinction to make. Like, it's great to not have people lose their jobs, but if they weren't performing that service, if they're not performing that service anymore, that service still needs to be done. Like, these things are not, they weren't like doing fun side quests. They were doing very important work for the city that still needs to be done. And yeah, what happens now? How big does that impact look? I know that some things are already kind of taking more time. 311 is a great example of that. So I wonder, especially now with this $2.6 billion convention center fiasco, how much more of an impact we will see over the next 30 years.
It's wild to think that we have to pay this for the next 30.
I will be in my 60s when this is meant to be paid off. I don't think it will be paid off by then. I will probably be dead.
You probably won't be, but we're getting towards the actuarial end of my tenure. So I'll only be paying it for 25 years. Thank you for flagging the 311, though. That has been impacted. And I will say, our blue bin sort of deteriorated, and I've been waiting for 2 weeks for a blue bin. So if anybody out there in 311 land is listening, we need another blue bin here. There are some streets where the lights are shining this week. That would be Hollywood Boulevard, because Jimmy's back. The censorship purge from the administration has at least taken a pause. That's on an indefinite hold right now as Jimmy's indefinite suspension ends. Kimmel came back on Tuesday night. It was a day where just hours before it was announced that he was coming back, there was a rally outside of his studio with six members of Congress, with representatives of SAG and WGA, Teamsters, IATSE, DGA. It was a very pointed and aggressive call on Disney to cut this shit and to the administration that this is just not acceptable. Everybody watch Jimmy?
I mean, it's awesome that he's back. I was honestly anticipating the worst. I really think we're in an environment right now where corporations are giving in to the Trump administration on pretty much any issue that's brought up. We saw Colbert didn't get picked up by Paramount in order to allegedly push through the Paramount Skydance merger. The Jimmy thing was definitely the most egregious attack on free speech and entertainment lately, but I'm honestly surprised it worked out, and kudos to all these coalitions that came together to support him.
It was definitely the most obvious of the administration's attacks. When the head of the FCC says we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way, like, that's pretty freaking telling.
It was very on the nose, yeah, as we say in entertainment. Freaking telling.
Rachel and I had very different perspectives. I thought he knocked it out of the park. I just really thought it was that it was a really good set of remarks. He thanked the right people for standing up for him, including people that he can't stand.
First of all, I want to thank the people who don't support my show and what I believe, but support my right to share those beliefs anyway. Like Ben Shapiro, Clay Travis, Candace Owens, Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, even my old pal Ted Cruz, who, believe it or not, said something very beautiful on my behalf.
He continued to poke fun at and take some jabs at the administration, which I thought were great. And I particularly appreciated the shout out he gave to Erica Kirk's forgiveness of the killer of her husband.
You understand that it was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man. I don't
think what you will about Charlie Kirk, and I think I disagreed with him on every freaking thing he's ever said. And he actually did, you know, call for people like me to be stoned to death. That was God's perfect law. But what she said when she got up there on that stage at that funeral and said, I forgive him. You can't respond to hate with hate. You have to respond to hate with love. I just thought was like an amazing, powerful moment. And I'm as glad Jimmy gave it a shout out as I am disgusted that Trump came up immediately afterwards and did exactly the opposite and preached the hate.
Yeah, I'm not super big on love thy enemy personally, but I will say that like the world that I am working to build with my organizing, right, like an inclusive world, a world that is more diverse, a world that is equitable, will ultimately benefit everybody, even the people that I disagree with. If that's loving thy enemy, sure, then I guess I agree. Look, I don't watch Jimmy Kimmel. I'm not his target audience. I was very surprised with how many people were boycotting and canceling subscriptions and doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, I think it's great. Like, I think there's a lot of ways that you can demonstrate your disagreement with the administration. So I think any activation is great and can lead to other types of organizing and other kinds of activism. Happy that he was reinstated, right? Like, good. And I watched his speech because I agree with you. I think that, like, I thought that it would be a very historic moment. I love TV, and two, I love when historic moments happen on TV because then I can watch them from my home and be comfortable. So we tuned in, which we never do, and I was very surprised. I was hoping that he would have invited the folks that were outside advocating for him that day onto stage with him to say thank you or have them read their speeches to the nation, to the world that was probably watching as well. Like, I thought there were so many other ways that that was going to go or could have gone or ought to have gone. But I was just really rubbed the wrong way with him turning on the waterworks. To me, it was fake, but, you know, everyone can have their opinion.
I mean, the thing that was so jarring to me about them coming for Jimmy Kimmel is that, and I mean this in the sweetest way, he's a very generic, like pretty milk toast, middle of the road guy. So for me, it was shocking that the free speech attacks came down on him. Like there have been a lot of other free speech issues in Hollywood. We saw Melissa Barrera lost her job on the Scream movies for advocating for Palestine. And in general, there's been a lot of free speech stuff over Palestine in Hollywood for several years now. So for me, I was always kind of like used to, you know, certain views being especially clamped down on. So for me, when they came after Jimmy Kimmel, I was kind of like, that's how far we've gotten. They're taking down Jimmy Kimmel now.
Yeah, no, because I think that is a point that I wanted to make too. Like Jimmy Kimmel is not, he's not Colbert. I feel like this is a very misplaced reaction. It should have gone to Colbert, who I do think has had a more, I don't know, linearly respectful career, if that makes sense.
He's wholesome. He has a Ben and Jerry's flavor.
Very wholesome.
I will
person.
Say, I went to the store to see if they had Jimmy Kimmel Ben and Jerry's. I was curious.
Just to
they
like
have,
support.
They have Stephen Colbert and they have Jimmy Fallon, but they don't have Jimmy Kimmel, which makes me
there's a reason for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that would be under Food and Drug Administration. That's RFK Jr., right?
Uh-oh.
So no Tylenol, no Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, yeah. Did everyone take their Tylenol that I prescribed
before
the show?
I did notice that they took the Tylenol Ben & Jerry's flavor off the shelves.
You've actually both have mentioned sort of the broader entertainment industry. You, Rachel, talked about how you wished Jimmy had given a platform for folks from WGA and other places. You know, our audience is a little bit smaller than his, but we, of course, have our WGA rep with us, with Olga, who also talked about the other forms of censorship in Hollywood. When I was listening to Kimmel the other night, I thought, the administration is still going to come. They're going to go after ABC now in a bigger way. And this is just a moment in the battle. But as you were talking, I was wondering, is there an opportunity for like a positive rebound from this where the forces in the entertainment industry can use this as a free speech moment to build upon and start addressing some of the other folks who've been silenced?
You know, that's so hard to say because the entertainment industry as a whole, there's corporations, there's indie stuff. And the corporations, I think, are always going to go with whatever is easiest for them to get, you know, whatever they want from whatever administration is in power. Like for the last several years, even just from a content perspective, the kind of material that was being developed was all like very diverse, you know, ooh, Democratic Party, DEI, like, ooh, we like that. And then as soon as Trump came in, you know, Paramount slashed their diversity programs to get the merger to push through. Other studios that have diversity fellowship programs renamed them to not emphasize diversity because they're all afraid they're going to be sued by Stephen Miller and his organization. So I think it just really depends on who's in power. I don't know if they're ever going to stand up for just free speech on its own. I think they're always going to have to be pushed to do even a semblance of the right thing. But I'm glad that just this once we kind of won.
Yeah. I'm glad you made that point, though, about the others who've been silenced in Hollywood, because we are, you know, McCarthyism wasn't just Joe McCarthy. It was the whole culture built around that of people ratting each other out and not standing up for people when they were getting screwed by the system. And you make the excellent point that that kind of stuff is still happening every day in Hollywood and people are being punished for their points of views.
Every day in Hollywood and even in LA at large, we've seen a massive threat to free speech and journalism just in the last 3 years. We saw what happened with the UCLA encampment and LAPD cracking down. The biggest thing for me was the arrest of journalists during these ICE raids. I actually protested outside of Karen Bass's house when Ant, the local journalist, was arrested while documenting an ICE raid. And it felt like the city didn't want to do anything, even though LAPD clearly had jurisdiction over this. They kept him in jail for an entire weekend, several days, and he was ultimately let go because he didn't do anything wrong. But we've been seeing this kind of thing happen to journalists at the local level everywhere, and everything happening in Hollywood just feels like the culmination of all this stuff that's been building.
Yeah, there's two pieces to this, right? There's the government action. There's the crap that FCC Chair Brendan Carr, I think it is, did with the threats and him and Trump talking about how they're going to silence people and, you know, Trump threatening reporters that are going to take away their free speech. There's the government end of it, but then there's also the corporate end, which isn't as visible and doesn't get as much attention. But you talked about how Hollywood is the corporations. We're getting close to it being the corporation, singular.
Because... we're going to work for a company called Warner Sky Discovery Time Mount.
Yeah, I mean, these corporate mergers are changing the nature of not just entertainment and culture, but of politics in this country. And one of the latest moves is the CEO of Oracle, Larry Ellison. He and his son David are basically creating a business empire that will rival Rupert Murdoch's in terms of scope and reach and impact. In addition to Oracle, it will include Paramount Global, Skydance, MTV, CBS, Warner Brothers Discovery, which owns HBO and CNN, among other properties.
I'll just jump in and say that in 1983, there were 50 media companies that controlled 90% of our media, and now it's 5. And that's very alarming. I mean, it is funny not to be a free market guy, because I'm not, but it doesn't feel like a very free market when there's 5 companies who control everything and don't have to compete with each other for anything. We're looking at Disney's potentially acquiring Lifetime now. The consolidation just keeps happening. And I do wonder if we're at a point where it cannot be undone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you would intentionally break up all these companies, like in an event where we have, you know, another general election and Donald Trump doesn't win, and we somehow elect someone who wants to undo everything that has been done over the last 40 years. How do we bring back even 10, 20 different owners versus just 5 yeah. or, you know, whatever? So I don't know. That's why I think like all of this is just a culture shift. Like, I feel like we're putting out a bunch of different fires all the time, like with hoses, when really we need to zoom out and like dump an ocean on all of the fires that are happening.
Well, and of course it's a culture shift, because when you've got a handful of companies that control almost all of the media in the country, that inherently shifts the culture.
Because I would love for everyone to think, Olga, like you were highlighting all the different types of censorship we have already experienced. Like, everyone is kind of Jimmy Kimmel, right? Like, that's how we should be operating. Like, any silenced voice, we should be in the streets for. Like, we were for
I am Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah. Je suis hashtag Jimmy Kimmel.
hashtag je suis Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, and that's one of the things that's interesting about it. Like, you described him, Olga, as being sort of middle of the road or something like that. That's actually significant in a way I hadn't thought of, because when one of us gets silenced, or when a left-wing commentator gets silenced, there's a lot of people in around the country who just don't think it affects them. But when somebody like Jimmy Kimmel, who they see in their living room 4 nights a week, gets impacted, then it's a lot closer to their views and their freedom of speech being impacted.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like for me, during all the ICE raids, like, people aren't really paying attention to local, like, LA Taco reporters being dragged off the street. But then we see New York comptroller Brad Lander being arrested by the NYPD, and it's like, oh, they can take the normies too. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I think Brad would appreciate being called a normie.
No shade to Brad. So much respect to Brad Lander.
Awesome guy. Olga, I'm wondering what the impact of this has, both the Kimmel actions and this corporate merger trend, what impact that's having on Hollywood writ large, writers and grips and everybody else who works in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing I feel like no one is talking about. This job contraction that's happening now is directly because of these mergers and because of Wall Street's profit mandates. It was, for years, streamers operated at a complete loss, churning out slop after slop after slop, barely making any money. And then suddenly Wall Street said, everybody has to be profitable now. And these companies started merging. All of them pretty much are profitable. I know Warner, Disney, and Paramount all achieved profitability, but the job contraction has not gone away. It's still about the same as last year. And for me, it's almost like they don't care about creating jobs, especially when there's only five companies running everything. There's no reason they even need to compete and keep making shows and keep trying to steal eyeballs from the other companies. It's really bad for our industry as a whole. And I mean, there's so much talk of trying to bring film back to LA and things like that. But like you said, it feels like that's a fire we're trying to put out when there's a whole forest fire behind us, too. In a lot of ways, this whole moment to me feels like a capital strike. Like, these companies are very willingly choosing to punish workers, likely in response to the fact that workers have demanded more and more rights and adequate pay while these companies are making historic profits. There's no point in the last decade when these companies were losing money, even when they were churning out TV shows and movies like never before. I mean, Netflix is slated to double their profits in the next 3 to 4 years. It's concerning. I almost don't understand what the end game is. Like, these people already control everything. They control our local politics. Ted Sarandos, so active here locally in City of LA. We remember he endorsed Rick Caruso. It really just feels like everything comes down to control, I guess, which is boring. I don't have a more interesting answer for what their plan is, but it really feels like there's one narrative that everybody is coming together to push, and it's that billionaires need to be richer.
Do you feel, as a writer, that it impacts the scope of what you're allowed to write?
Absolutely. There's just certain stuff they don't want to make anymore. There was a show I loved on Prime called Clean Slate, starring Laverne Cox, who's a trans woman. And the show did really well for Prime, and it got taken off the air. It wasn't advertised whatsoever. So a lot of stuff like that that was developed before the Trump administration, you're seeing kind of disappear. There's absolutely a movement to getting rid of anything that looks like DEI or sounds like DEI. There's so much more emphasis on rebooting old franchises from the 80s and bringing back, like, cop shows, and media is becoming very uninteresting as a whole.
I mean, everything is getting worse, right? Like, the content that the streamers are producing, they're producing with knowing that it's essentially a second screen. You're going to be on your phone half the time. So if you are actually watching some of these shows that are like Netflix exclusives or like whatever, you can tell that they think that. Like, if you're really trying to pay attention to a show, which sometimes a lot of the times I am on my phone. Sue me. If I am trying to pay attention, I'm like, oh, this is that actually interesting? And nothing's actually happening. And these characters are not written as well as they would have been 20 years ago. I rewatch a lot of stuff. I love Cheers. I love Frasier. Love Seinfeld. And yeah, it's like, give me that back. I want a 27-minute, 9-season, you know, like 25 episodes a season. Like, that's what I want again. You can't just watch TV like a normal person anymore. You have to have like 20 logins. And if you log into the TV in your room, well, the TV in your living room is going to be mad at you and ask you if you're in the same household. And it's like such a runaround.
And then your mom has to text you.
And then
and
your
say,
mom's like, what's the password?
Can you check your phone for the code?
Oh my gosh. My multiple times a week, because I want
multiple
my mom,
times a
I
week.
I want her to watch her Hulu, and I want her yes. to watch her HBO. And
I can't
I'm fine
take
to
away
pay
her
for
Hulu.
It. Let me pay for it. But
well,
yeah, it's just
the benefit of everything becoming one corporation is there should be just one app and one login.
Give me,
that's great.
You know what? Yeah. Give
I actually
one
support
app.
Corporate consolidation now.
If it's one app and
no,
one login.
No, I take it back.
Be easier then to undo at some point. If we ever regain control, we can then just say, oh, okay, this is national now. And now everything is just a national
the national one app.
Well, for the past week, I have been rewatching The Leftovers as a thank you to Damon Lindelof, who was one of the very few prominent voices in the entertainment industry and called on Disney to reinstate Kimmel. Were you surprised, Olga, that there weren't more studio heads, more directors, more producers who were saying something?
You know, not really. I mean, so few people in this industry have enough power to take a stand like that mm-hmm. when it comes to it. Like, I think the fear, especially now, you know, with the contraction, so many people haven't worked in a year or two or three or yeah. five. I know many people haven't worked since COVID hit, which is when it first started to really contract. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, I can't say anything. I need a job. I'll never work again yeah. if I say anything. I have a big mouth, so I will say anything. So you guys can get me to say the most inflammatory thing you want right now, and I will. But I really feel like few people have the kind of platform and power and sway where they can say something and it has an actual threat to somebody who has billions of dollars.
One of my favorite lines of the past week was Alyssa quoted it in her Twitter coverage of that rally outside Jimmy Kimmel Live Studios, was an actor and a SAG member, Shannon Corbett or Corbell, who said, "I want to be in Andor, not living in Andor."
Yeah, and it was great that the Tony Gilroy spoke out about it too, the creator of Andor. But I actually, to be honest, I think that the displays of thousands of people marching around Disney are in a way more powerful than any mm-hmm. one person stepping up and saying like, hey, like I almost think they counted on us to be like, Jimmy Kimmel, who's that? You know?
Right.
But yeah, everybody came together. And I mean, so much of that solidarity was born through the strike and getting through this very, very difficult period in the industry together. I've truly never seen Hollywood labor so tight-knit as we are now. And I do think that they are afraid of that because they know we are going to have each other's back when good. Huge issues come up.
That's good to see. I mean, there were 6 members of Congress there at that thing the other day. You don't usually get 6 members of Congress to stand together when they're back home in the district.
I feel like you usually can't even get one to show up to something.
Yeah. Lindsay Horvath was there, Hugo Sotomayor, a lot of rank and file workers. And there were 1 or 2counter protesters who were pro-Trump.
Anti-Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah.
I think they were more anti-free speech than anti-Jimmy Kimmel, but yeah. And they tried to drown things out unsuccessfully. So the entertainment industry, what's happening with it, is always a through line in Los Angeles, has been for decades. Something which has become a through line in Los Angeles since June 6th is the presence of ICE and what they're doing to our families and to our neighbors, into our neighborhoods. But there was some news this week of some new efforts to counter program ICE raids.
I'll be straight up. I've helped track ICE around the West Side. They're very easy to spot a lot of the times because they look like an ICE agent and they drive a crazy car that's 10 feet tall. But it's actually pretty terrifying. There's a lot of rapid response groups that have formed that kind of go around, you know, watch, monitor, see who they're targeting, whether it's maybe a specific car wash is hit so we can warn all the other car washes in the area, that kind of strategizing. But recently in a group I'm in, somebody was following ICE around and got a call from an unmarked number that read their name, address, and license plate out loud to them over the phone and hung up. So ICE is fighting back. This stuff is actually getting really scary. And I really worry about how many activists here in LA are going to be threatened by this administration because they've been cracking down on activists for a while now.
Yeah, they're utilizing license plate trackers. It sounds like that's exactly what they did to that particular person. But there are cameras everywhere all over the county that are tracking cars and license plates, and they're owned by sheriff departments. Some are owned by the federal government. Some are owned by LAPD. So AI is being utilized to track us, and it's facial recognition, but it's also these license plate trackers. And so all of this data is getting fed into different law enforcement agencies at different points. And so this is something that we all need to be really alarmed with. And I think that there needs to be a lot more legislation around this. And I think we're going to talk about some of that. But this is something that we really all need to be worried about, how we are protecting ourselves from these facial recognition technologies, but also license plate trackers if you are in a car.
Yeah, I mean, the license plate trackers are expanding. They're expanding on the West Side because the local council member wants more of them.
Thanks, Tracy.
But
enemy of the pod.
And that's probably true. But there seems to be like a shadowy, villainous billionaire behind everything going on these days. It's just like in a Hollywood movie or in a comic book. And the shadowy Hollywood villain in this one is Peter Thiel, who I'm so regretful he's a member of the gay community, because it's just we already had Roy Cohn. Peter Thiel is just a couple steps too far.
It's very exciting for me when the surveillance is coming from a gay man.
Yeah, gay surveillance.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. Yeah, Thiel needs to be watching Fellow Travelers, which was about what the gay community went through starting in the 50s under McCarthyism, all the way up to the AIDS crisis in the 80s. But the surveillance people lived under, the undercover cops, the way people were getting fired for being gay. For
the trick mirrors and cruising spots where they recorded people.
Yep. Exactly. And this was happening in L.A. up until like the 80s. Mm-hmm. For Peter Thiel to sort of ignore our history, his history, my history like that, and do what he's doing is just really disappointing. And what he is doing, for those who aren't familiar, is he owns Palantir Technologies. Alyssa writes about it a lot, but it's an intelligence and a defense company. It sells AI-based data platforms that allow its users, military, law enforcement, to analyze personal data, including your social media profiles, right? And your personal info, your physical characteristics, to build information that can lead to someone calling you from an unknown number and telling you your name and your phone number and your license plate. And this week there were, he has an office in West Hollywood, and there were demonstrators out this week who were protesting in front of his place. And, you know, they were saying that what we're seeing further evidence of is that this technology is being used by ICE in tracking, identifying people. And, you know, the concerns that they were articulating were that government can now target anyone that it deems as an enemy, whether it's somebody who's undocumented to somebody who's a member of DSA or somebody who's at a protest or somebody who laughs at the wrong anti-Trump joke.
Yeah, I love the move by Supervisor Solis to increase accountability in who is requesting our license plate data and when and where it is being released. So this, I think this added layer of bureaucracy is very important to keeping people safe. We do want our law enforcement agencies to report back who is requesting this data and when they requested that data, because that could be very pivotal in keeping certain people safe. But I also wonder, and I don't know if you might know about this, Mike, how does this work for folks who take public transit and use tap cards? Are their tap card journeys private? Could law enforcement agencies like request someone's tap card data?
I don't think they can, actually, because somebody tried to FOIA request, or rather CPRA request, the tap card records of everybody on our board, mm-hmm. which was done in other cities to show how few members ride transit. And California did not allow it to happen. Although I would have loved a ranking of who rides transit the least on the Metro board, because I think we all know.
Okay.
And you know what? I mean, I have to say, too, the call is coming from inside the house on this one. We haven't talked about Heidi Feldstein Soto much, who is embroiled in so many ethics issues right now. But namely, I don't know if everybody here saw the McGinnis declaration, where one of her own staffers came forward to talk about how Heidi was allegedly monitoring local activists who were not guilty of any wrongdoing, and trying to build cases against them before they even did anything. Richie Sergenko from People's City Council is one of the people who was targeted by her. And between the fact that our own LAPD was arresting journalists during these ICE raids, I really wonder who locally actually does have our best interest at heart, especially with the Olympics coming up, to tie it all back to this 30-year debt of a convention center. It just makes me feel like things are going to ramp up and get way worse.
And by the way, that's why no one wants to come here. All of the shit that's involved with the convention center, all of the like AI shit that's going to be threaded in trying to access the convention center, probably. If you've been to the Dome in Inglewood, you know what I'm talking about. Trying to get in there, you have to scan your phone or your face. You can't pay with cash. You have to tap. All of that is tracking you. I imagine the quote unquote modernization of the convention center is going to look very similarly. And also knowing that the way that Palantir is trying to continuously roll out AI and other data processors into local law enforcement agencies all over the country, LAPD, our sheriff's department are also probably going to have a lot more AI-powered technologies to use against us. That is what is going to deter people from coming here, not the fact that some people might be sleeping on the street. I like need the city to kind of understand that too. That is actually hostile architecture. That is hostile to people. That's hostile to people who live here. That's also hostile to people who might want to travel here. So like all of this, as you said, Mike, everything's tied to a billionaire. Everything is being driven into the ground by money. And it's just not making anything better. It's making everything more annoying and it's making us more unsafe. And it's so incredibly frustrating because it feels like we can't do anything about it. Like, I don't know how to stop my license plate from being tracked. You legally have to drive with license plates. So
a law that doesn't apply to police or ICE, evidently.
Right. So yeah, maybe just Rachel, the moral of the story here is wear a face mask, use a tap card and take transit, not drive a car, honestly, is like probably the safest way to do it.
Well, and it underscores the importance of engaging locally because it's the level of government where you can have an impact, right? And, you just talked about the county putting through this resolution to not share the data or to reveal who's asking for the data. Those type of pushbacks are really important, and it's the place where we can make that happen, right? The point you made about Heidi Feldstein Soto, the city attorney, though, is really chilling. If she is doing what she's alleged to be doing and is surveilling people and is picking a name of somebody and telling her team, prosecute this person, find something to prosecute them for, when she's targeting and arresting journalists, well, that's exactly what Trump is doing.
100%.
That's the same thing. It's the same playbook.
And she can only do it because of companies like Palantir. Mm-hmm. She can only do that because of this technology. Like, it would be, I mean, they obviously did it during McCarthyism, but like, it would be much harder. It would be much harder. Mm-hmm. And we should be trying to make their jobs, especially someone like Heidi, a lot harder to do. If her end goal is the same as Trump, to prosecute people who haven't done anything wrong or to try to find something they did wrong and immediately have an entire dossier of information against them, then like our job is to make that harder. Yeah. And we can do that collectively.
So a week ago, hundreds of people gathered at MacArthur Park and the mayor and I think Eunice Hernandez and a bunch of others unveiled what they described as a community initiative to monitor, I guess, to counter-monitor the ICE folks. They call it the Save America Movement. They say it's a rapid response and civic empowerment initiative to ensure that people have a clear understanding of the actions and impact of ICE. And it's like a well-labeled van. I mean, it looks sort of like a news truck rolling up. It's about as subtle as the ICE presence at MacArthur Park a month ago. Olga, you're actually out there as a first responder, as mutual aid and supporting people and helping on the West Side Network in documenting where these things are happening. What was your reaction to the Save America production that they announced?
I actually didn't even hear about this until just now.
Oh, wow.
So it's anti-ICE.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is. I mean,
when you first said Save America, I know. I got nervous because that
the name is a little confusing.
Yep.
I mean, that's awesome. Anytime you can have a visible presence in the community and show people that they're not wanted here, I think a lot of these ICE agents, when confronted by people in the community, tend to back off pretty easily. I'm not going to be the one doing the confronting because I'm an immigrant. So all of you can do the confronting. But anytime somebody is out there mounting a stand, I think that's good. Anytime we can occupy spaces with our own community's eyes on the street, I think that's awesome. And it's such a powerful tool that runs counter to what people usually think about when it comes to public safety.
Yeah, they're going to have three vans. They're going to be specially outfitted vans that will have specially trained camera crews and volunteers to help capture the ICE operations. The vans are dubbed Liberty Van 1, 2, and 3. They're going to include lawyers and clergy and veterans and videographers, like a whole crew of people who'll be participating.
These must be big vans, like clown car size.
It did look like a pretty big van, and it was, you know, outfitted with, you know, brightly colored logos and stuff like that. Rachel, the name Save America Movement, these vans dubbed Liberty Van 1, 2, and 3, what's your reaction to the terminology they're using?
I think Save America is interesting because
it's a choice.
It reminds me of the Bernie AOC rally, right, with the like Take America Back chants. Yeah. And I feel very strongly that it's not about going back to where we were or like saving us from this moment, because I think it is my opinion that the founding of this country is like everything wrong, right? All of the isms. And so I think that our job is to collectively move all of us forward to a world that is better and different. And so I don't know that Save America is what I would have said, but I digress. I love the idea of Liberty Vans. I love the idea that they're so big. I love that their entire point is to monitor and record. I appreciate that they are offering connection points for folks like clergy members and other people who can provide services to them in these moments of extreme crisis. If folks are not actually taken, I think it's great that they can identify a van that is safe for them to go to in that moment, because, you know, if I get stopped in the middle of a park and have this encounter, I'm alone, like, you know, you're not around your people. But if I can identify that there is a van of my people, of my community that I can go to and talk to and just calm down for a little bit and get help, then yeah, I think that that's amazing. I think it's especially important in this moment. It's almost October. We've now been living through this for months and months. This current iteration of ICE raids, a lot of people are dying in these concentration camps. A lot of people are dying in other ICE facilities. We're seeing people being trafficked to other countries. So
we also just saw an activist arrested in an ICE raid, killed in an LA County jail.
Yeah, exactly. Like, people are literally dying. And so having footage, I don't know if it helps in the moment, but like it will help eventually. And I have to believe that all of these little actions that we are all taking like will help eventually. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just sit back and throw your hands up. And we have to be a model for the rest of the country. We have to continue to demonstrate solidarity. So I appreciate the work that all of these people are doing, because it is not easy. And I hope that everyone that is participating in this movement has support and takes time to rest.
Well, there will be an opportunity for people to demonstrate again on Saturday, this coming Saturday, October 4th, at 10 a.m. downtown at the 6th Street Bridge. There's going to be a big rally, Stop the Hate, Stop the Raids, We the People Are Rising. It's a march and rally, and its message is targeting the supercharging of immigration enforcement, saying that that money, instead of going to create this militaristic anti-immigrant secret police force, should be going to people, and it should go for health care and for education, and that we need to be getting back to having stronger union contracts.
You sound kind of like a communist, Mike.
And so are all of the organizations sponsoring it. This is a lot of community organizations, CHERLA, a lot of labor organized in this, SEIU, 721, Local 11, Service Workers West, LA Teachers Union, LA County Federation of Labor. I think this will be a good one. And of course, they're always well-timed at this point in our history.
I think I will say my one thought about the name Save America, which you brought up, is to me, it feels like it's just specific cities being targeted, you know, LA, Chicago, New York, DC. And to me, it almost feels like it should be Save Los Angeles from America, if that makes sense. Not that Los Angeles doesn't have its own problems that we've talked about extensively today, but my punch-up note is to change the name.
Yeah, it's like save Black and Brown America is like kind of what it is, because they're deliberately targeting historic Black and Brown communities in this country. It's not a mistake. So yeah, they're targeting cities very deliberately, and we are not necessarily the communities that they want the U.S. to be known for. I also just, like, I hate saying America.
Well, one final note is that there's a special occasion this week being celebrated, and that is October 1st is, anybody know?
Clean Air Day.
Clean Air Day, yes. And that is part of a week-long commemoration of, you should know,
SoCal Transit Month?
Well,
SoCal Transit Week?
Well, okay. So yeah,
why do I know what it is?
You got SoCal Transit Month, and then you have this coming week, which is the week without driving.
Oh, yes, the week without driving. Sorry, every week of my life is a week without driving. So this one's not very special, is it?
Yes, Alyssa wanted us to put a pledge out to our listeners to not drive at least on October 1st.
And to incentivize you, most of our transit systems are free.
On
Big
October
Blue
1st,
Bus
transit
is free.
Yep.
Shout out, by the way, to Mike Bonin, who worked tirelessly on the Metro board to try to get free fares.
Thank you.
It is a really important barrier for a lot of people in riding transit. I served on the Metro Public Safety Advisory Committee. I'm here in my personal capacity, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things I was most struck by is reading that for mothers with babies, having to have exact fare was a huge barrier to getting on the bus. Mm-hmm. And having to have the exact number of tap cards or cash that you need to board and not knowing how to calculate a transfer and things like that. So I am personally a big free fare head. Mike is kind of the biggest voice in that fight. So take advantage of those free fares. Mike Bonin worked very hard.
It ain't done. It ain't done, though. It's done on October 1st, but I still do meetings with Metro staff periodically in my gig at Pat Brown Institute at Cal State LA. And I was on a call with them the other day, and before the call ended, I said, remember, free transit. Like, we remember, director.
It's our system is so uniquely poised to have free transit because we are funded by a county sales tax that all of us already pay. So you're like double dipping, you know? It's not great being charged twice for the bus. The bus should be free. It should be awesome. It should be frequent. And getting more people to ride it in LA is the best way for that to happen. I will say the majority of car trips in Los Angeles are 3 miles or less. That is the perfect distance to take the bus. Maybe if you have a bike and you ride your bike and you don't live like in the worst areas to bike in that have tons of cars. For example, if you live in Culver City or Santa Monica or somewhere else with bike lanes, consider trying them out on Clean Air Day. It really does make a difference. If we reduce California's car emissions, which are like 50% of our emissions right now are from transportation, we actually have a fighting chance of never having to live in the humidity we're experiencing right now again, because that's caused by the ocean getting warmer. If you hate humidity, take the bus. That's my argument. Or ride a bike.
Amen. That's our public service announcement for this week. Well, we have one more public service announcement. That is, if you enjoy this podcast, if you like that we're doing it weekly, want us to continue doing that, please don't just listen. Please also go to thinkforward.la and sign up. Be a paid subscriber. We're going to be doing some cool membership stuff coming up. We're going to be doing a members-only in-person gathering of all our big cast of rotating hosts and some other special stuff as well. So our thanks, as always, to all of Greenspan for keeping us on track and making us sound good, for editing and producing this podcast. Our thanks to LA Forward for sponsoring this podcast, and our thanks to you for listening. That's it for this week. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
I wonder what is going on here. Is this space hell or is it paradise? And will we make it worse or make it nice? What's the forecast now?